Let me pray as we get in the Word this morning. God, we thank you that we get to come here together this morning. God, I pray that you would speak to our hearts and that you would use my words for your glory. In your awesome name I pray. Amen. So we ask ourselves a lot of different questions, right? And when I was a senior in college, my buddies and I would try to come up with hypothetical questions. This is me and my buddies. I'm the guy in the red. On Friday and Saturday night, when we would get bored, this is before you could just Google stuff so we could actually debate it, we would come up with hypotheticals that we thought didn't have an answer. And two of my favorites had to do with sports. The first was, could the five of us guys beat LeBron James in a game of basketball 5-on-1? Five foot 11 guys versus 1 6-foot-8 NBA player. Could we do it 5-on-1? I don't know. Probably not. And our other debate that we thought was a pretty good question, could us and a couple other guys, 9 of us, beat the Little League World Series champions in a game of baseball? Bunch of 20-year-olds versus 12-year-olds. And embarrassingly enough, we think we wouldn't have a chance against those 12-year-olds because we can't pitch 80 miles an hour, so I don't know how they do it either. But there's not really a good answer to those questions, and ultimately, the answer doesn't really matter that much either, right? Well, there's another type of question that's about honesty and where we have to take an evaluation of ourselves. In one of my classes that I took recently online, we had to give ourselves an evaluation, it's for seminary, of how much of the reading we did. And so it was a 14-week class, and for the first 10 weeks, I did great. Read every page of the material, was doing really good. Then week 11 came, and I read about 60% of it, and my paper was due the next week, and then I had exams. And for weeks 12, 13, and 14, I literally did not open my book. And then in week 14, the evaluation comes. And you can't lie, because it's seminary, right? Like, you gotta be honest and give yourself 0 points because you're reading about the history of the Bible. You can't lie that, yeah, I did read the history when you didn't. And so I had to be honest and answer the question and see how my score got lower every time I put a 0 in there for those last 3 weeks, if I was gonna answer it correctly or incorrectly. Then there's a third type of question that gets really personal. When I was 23 years old, I was trying to figure out what I was gonna do with this girl I was dating named Sarah. This is a picture of us much more well-rested a long time ago before we had children, and we were just dating at the time, and we were both still perfect in each other's eyes, and she's still perfect, but I'm not sure about me. And she came to visit me. I was doing ministry overseas in the Middle East, and she was traveling with a band here in the States. And this was at Christmas time when she came to visit in Istanbul. And after she left, I was praying for months, like, what am I going to do? Like, I love this girl. How is this going to work? And in May of 2007 is when I had kind of decided that I think that I want to ask this girl to marry me. And my buddies and I had been talking about it, and they gave me their opinions and thoughts. But ultimately, only one person's answer to my question really mattered. Because I didn't care if everyone else in the world was going to say, this is a great idea. If Sarah didn't say yes when I proposed, that would have been a rough moment. Really rough. Thankfully, she said yes, but really the only answer to that question that mattered was her. I didn't care what anybody else said. I only cared how she answered the question. And so we're going to look at a question today that a lot of people debate. Some people think there's no right answer to, just like our sports hypotheticals. We're going to look at a question where you have to give yourself an evaluation, to be honest with yourself. And I'm going to ask you this question. It's up on the screen already. Who is Jesus? Where really only matters how you answer the question. Not how I answer the question, not how someone else answers it, but only how you answer the question. So who is Jesus? For those of you that are first time here, or you've been around the Christmas season, you know that we're jumping in this Alpha course. And the Alpha course is an amazing opportunity to take 6 weeks and look at some of these basic, fundamental questions of our faith. It's not meant to be a lecture to answer all the questions. It's a chance, it's a platform to discuss them and to see what do you think. It's a safe place to talk. And so we're going to look at this for 6 weeks. This is technically the second week because there's like an intro week. But the question on the table this week for the over, I think it's Tim said, 32 small groups that we'll be meeting on the Alpha course this week, we're going to look at the question of who is Jesus. On Thursday nights, they're going to have dinners at 5:30. If you want to come join for that with your group for fellowship and meet afterwards. But my goal this morning isn't to convince you of the answer of this question, because that's what you're going to look at this week. My goal is to make this question personal for every one of you, so that it's not a hypothetical question, but that when you look through the material this week at Alpha Course, and if you absolutely can't make it, search for it on YouTube, watch it online. I want you to be thinking, how would I answer this question? Not what is the question, but how would I answer this question about who is Jesus? And to get us thinking, I want to show you a little video clip. It's called True You. It was from the makers of the Truth Project that asked this question on a university campus of who is Jesus.
Who was Jesus?
Who is Jesus?
That's the question.
That's the question.
Was he a real person?
What did he say?
What did he do?
What made him so special?
What made him different than any other man in history?
The records show. His birth was a miracle. His mom was a virgin and she was pregnant.
He made the blind see.
The deaf hear.
The mute speak.
The paralyzed walk.
He healed terrible diseases.
He knew what was in men's minds.
He knew what was in men's hearts.
He knows what is in men's hearts.
He knew the story of people's lives without ever having met them.
He spoke with authority.
He amazed teachers.
He amazed everyone. Nature obeyed him.
He turned water into wine.
He walked on water.
He walked on top of the water.
He could change the weather.
He fed 5,000 people from one lunchbox.
He brought people who were dead back to life.
He loved sinners.
He loved everyone.
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 He forgave sins.
He never made a mistake.
He never once sinned.
But we judged him.
We whipped and beat him.
We spit on him.
And we killed him.
He loved us anyway.
He loves us anyway.
He died for us.
He died so that we wouldn't have to.
He paid for our sins with his life.
Did I mention he loves us?
He came back to life.
He was dead.
Then he was alive.
A lot of people saw him.
He is coming back.
Who is Jesus?
That's a big question.
That's the big question.
What does it even matter?
What does it matter to you?
Who is Jesus?
My answer doesn't matter to you.
Only your answer matters to you.
Who do you say that he is?
Who do you say that he is?
So who is Jesus? When I found out this was what I was speaking about, I was like, how do I answer that question? It's a big question. And we have to answer it. Some people may say, well, Jeremy, I don't care about the answer. Well, that's your answer. Some people would say, we don't really know he was a guy in history. That's your answer. Some people would say that Jesus is the Son of God. That's your answer. But have you ever considered how important your answer to that question is? How important the way you answer the question, who is Jesus? How important is that? Jesus was at the center of our faith. He's the most important and most influential person in all of history. And how we change Jesus, how we view Jesus, changes everything. And how do I know that this is such a big deal and such an important question? Well, Jesus asked his disciples the same question. We're going to look at a little story, a little interaction between Jesus and his 12 disciples this morning from the book of Matthew, chapter 16. You can read the same account in Mark and Luke. I chose the one in Matthew because it's the longest and most in-depth. But before I look at it, I want to give you guys a little context. One thing I'm learning is that you can read a verse out of the Bible and it's powerful, but when you get the context and you see it within the bigger picture, not even within the chapter, a few chapters, but you see it within maybe the whole book of Matthew and how it fits in there, you get to see the importance and significance of what is actually going on. Because everything Jesus did was intentional. And so I want to give you a little bit of the backdrop of what's going on in Matthew chapter 16. Matthew is writing this gospel, and the 12 disciples have been with Jesus now for over a year. They've been traveling with him, they've been getting to know him, and they've been spending time with him, just day-to-day life. We have the benefit of looking back and seeing the whole picture. They had just spent a year or so with Jesus, and were still learning. But they'd seen some pretty amazing things. They had seen Jesus feed 5,000 people. They had seen Jesus walk on water. They had seen Jesus give sight to somebody who was blind. They saw people who were sick just touch Jesus and become healed. They saw him feed 4,000 people, and they saw him cast out demons right in front of them. These 12 men had spent over a year just being with Jesus. And in the first half of this chapter, after all these experiences, the Sadducees and Pharisees had come up to Jesus, and they're basically the Jewish teachers of the time. And we kind of lumped them together, even though they're very separate and disagreed about a lot. But the one thing they did agree about, was they didn't like Jesus. And so they came up to Jesus and said, "Jesus, prove that you're God. Show us a miracle." And Jesus didn't do it, because he knew that wasn't going to change their hearts. That's not why they came to him. And so the disciples had seen him do all those miracles, had seen the leading religious figures of the time challenge him, and Jesus not give into that. And then Jesus asks him some questions, and that's where I want to pick it up. In verse 13 of chapter 16, it says, "When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples." And I want to pause right there, because after looking at the big picture, I want to zoom in a little bit. What's going on in Caesarea Philippi? Well, most of the time when I read stuff in the Bible, I'm like, yeah, it's a city, whatever, and I move on. But there's something significant about this, because this is the most northern part of Jesus' ministry. After he goes to Caesarea Philippi, Jesus' whole ministry shifts. He sets his sights towards Jerusalem. He's heading back south again. And for the rest of the book of Matthew, it's about Jesus going towards Jerusalem and preparing himself for his eventual crucifixion. The disciples don't know that that's coming, but that's where he's heading. And in the chunk of passage right after this, in the later part of the chapter 16 of Matthew, for the first time, Jesus predicts his own death. We know what happens in Jerusalem, but the disciples had no idea. And so in this time, in this place, in a city that had lots of gods, Caesarea Philippi had a temple to Caesar, and had a temple to the god Pan, which is the pantheistic god that worshiped tons of different gods. Pastor Tim said he was there several years ago, and there's still a statue in Caesarea Philippi today honoring the god of pantheism. And so it's a place with all these different religious ideas. Do I know exactly why Jesus took his disciples to Caesarea Philippi? No idea. But I know that at the time, this was a place where people discussed all kinds of different beliefs. And Jesus is asking them a very specific question right here. And he asks them this simple question in verse 14. He says, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" He's basically asking his disciples, what's the word on the street? What are people out there saying about me? What do you hear other people say about who I am? And this is how they answer. They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." Now this is a significant answer for a couple reasons, because A, it's true. That's what people were saying, but it was controversial. Because those same Jewish leaders, the Sadducees and Pharisees, they didn't want to see Jesus as a prophet. They believed the prophets had stopped in the Old Testament. They were just waiting for the Messiah, and they did not think that that's who Jesus was. And so the fact that people were saying that was a big deal, and Jesus is acknowledging that. He knows that that's what people are saying. When I was doing some research on this question this week, I'd read this passage many times, but I never realized the switch that Jesus makes with his next question. He asks this question about what are people saying, but then with a few words, Jesus makes it super personal. And he doesn't want to know what other people say, but then he goes to this next question in verse 15. He says, "What about you?" He said, "Who do you say that I am?" He didn't ask the disciples who they thought he was. He didn't ask the disciples who they believed he was. Jesus asked, "Who do you say that I am?" He asked these 12 guys, "Who do you say? What do you say about me?" Because Jesus knows what's coming. He knows that he's going to be heading towards Jerusalem and that he is going to be crucified. None of the 12 disciples knew that. He knew that after he was dead and buried for 3 days, he was going to rise from the dead. And he knew that 10 of these 12 disciples were going to die for their faith as martyrs. They didn't know that, but he did. And so he's asking them, "Who do you say that I am? What are you going to be willing to say about me, Jesus?" I'm not Jesus. "About me, Jesus, when I am gone." And he wants them to say it out loud. It doesn't matter what everyone else is saying. It doesn't matter what all 12 of you think. What do you personally say? And this is where I love Peter. Peter gets a bad rap in the Bible. He lot of times just speaks first and thinks later, and I've been accused of doing that on occasion too, so I really like Peter. And this time, he gets it right. A lot of times, Peter says the thing that I'm sure all the 11 other disciples were thinking. At least that's how I justify it to myself when I say things that I shouldn't. Everyone else was thinking it, and he was one who had the guts to say it. But here, Peter gets it right. Here's how Peter answers Jesus. Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And it's significant in two ways, because the word he uses, Messiah, is the same word as anointed one in the Old Testament. So Peter's acknowledging, the one we were waiting for in the Old Testament, that's you, Jesus. You are that Messiah. You're the one we've been waiting for, and you're the Son of the living God. Jesus, we know you're different. We know that you are God. I know, Peter, that you are God. And Jesus responds in verse 17. He says, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven." Jesus kind of gives Peter an attaboy, like, well done. Believe it or not, only 6 or 7 verses later in this same chapter is that famous passage where Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan," to Peter, because Peter disagrees with Jesus. So he's giving him this attaboy because he's acknowledging that, Peter, you get it. I am the Messiah and I am the Son of God, and he wants to confirm that to Peter. And so who is Jesus? Is he human? Is he God? Is he alive today? If your answer to all those three questions is yes, it's a game changer. Because if Jesus is God, we better listen up and take his word seriously. If Jesus is human, I pray that you would never accuse him of this idea that he doesn't understand what you're going through, because he is human. And if he is alive today, what we do right here, right now matters for eternity. See, the disciples were probably much more easily able to see Jesus as human. They spent, in total, about 3 years with him. Even by this point, they've spent over a year of their lives with him. They've seen him walk. They've seen him sweat. They've seen him be hungry. They've seen him sleep. They've seen Jesus be a normal human being. So they could understand that he was human. And so when Jesus is asking him this question, "Who am I?" Peter's making sure that Jesus understands that he knows that he's God too. They could see him as human. But for some of us, the challenge might be flipped. I struggled for years, and I still struggle with this today. How could Jesus be fully human? It's easy for me to see him as God, but how could he be fully human and be like me? This week when I was preparing for my sermon, I was talking to my son, Seth, and he's recently potty trained. Here's my cowboy, Seth. And because he's recently potty trained, he's doing a great job. But his definition of privacy is I have to go in the bathroom with him, and then we shut the door, and then we have privacy. So I've spent a lot of time in the bathroom with my 3-year-old son. And on Monday, I was wondering, I was like, who is Jesus? How do you answer that question? And so I was like, I wonder what Seth has to say. And so I asked him, I was like, "Sethy, who is Jesus?" No hesitation, "He's the Son of God." "Well done, son." He had this look on his face like, "Dad, shouldn't you know that? Like, you work at a church. Like, why are you asking me this? I'm on the bathroom." And so we talked about a few other things, and about 20 seconds later, I was like, "Well, see what else he says." I'm like, "Sethy, what else? What else do you think about Jesus?" He's like, he thought for a second, "He's the one who made us." "Well done, Seth." And I had thought to myself, I should have videotaped this so I could show you guys. But obviously, they'd be showing you a toilet in church, and that might be frowned upon. Like, it'd be kind of weird. And when he's old, he might look back on that and be like, "Dad, seriously?" But my family's a little weird in general, because most families, you have cops and robbers and stuff. In my house, it's always David and Goliath chasing themselves around the house. And whenever Seth gets this look on his mean face, you're like, "Seth, what's wrong?" He's like, "I'm Pharaoh, and I'm going to get you, Moses." And I'm like, "You are weird, son. Like, I'm sorry," but clearly he's listening. But for me, it's really easy to see Jesus as God. It's so easy through his miracles and what he did to see him as God, but it's so hard for me to see Jesus as a guy like me that had to get up in the morning, that had to eat, that had to sleep, that had challenges. It's so hard for me to understand that. But it's so clear in Scripture that Jesus was both fully God and fully human at the same time. See, because if Jesus wasn't fully human, his temptation wasn't real. If Jesus wasn't fully human, his birth wasn't real. And if Jesus wasn't fully human, his suffering and death on a cross weren't really real. So who is Jesus? Why try to answer the question of who Jesus is? Well, because I believe that when you answer the question of who someone is and you understand who that person is, You have a completely different relationship. You see them differently when you understand who they are. When I was in college, my sophomore year, I was super involved in Campus Crusade for Christ. It's a great missions organization and has a college ministry. And we did Bible studies and I was discipled and stuff. But we also did a fall retreat. It was in Kalamazoo. We'd go away for a weekend. And my sophomore year, I met Nick Willis. Nick is a great guy. We all love Nick. And I knew he was a runner. He ran for U of M, was on their track team. And we were playing football together one afternoon. And we were talking about stuff. And, you know, as guys, you always got to kind of compare each other. But Nick is really humble. And we were talking about how good he was, and I asked him how good he was, and he's like, yeah, I'm ranked like 9th or 10th, and I knew that he had done really well at the Big Ten races, and so I thought he probably means like 9th or 10th in the NCAAs, like in college, as a sophomore in college being ranked 9th or 10th in the U.S., and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Plus, he was a Kiwi, he's from New Zealand, all the girls thought he was so cute, so everyone wanted to get to know Nick. But I was talking to him more that afternoon, and he started talking about stuff like the Commonwealth Games and Great Britain and these races in Europe and other stuff, and all of a sudden it dawned on me. Nick's not ranked 9th or 10th in the U.S. Nick is ranked 9th or 10th in the world. And I was like, no, that can't be. And so because I'm Peter, I went up to Nick and I was like, Nick, are you ranked 9th or 10th in the world? He's like, yeah. There's like about 9 or 10 guys that I compete with in the world on a regular basis. And he's like that's not a big deal. He was ranked 9th or 10th. And what you can see, the picture of me and him together, that's him holding his bronze medal. He won a bronze and a silver medal in the Olympics. Like, Nick is fast. And when you know that he's ranked that, you think of him differently as a runner. I went running with Nick once. Stupidest decision of my entire life. Our warm-up just about killed me. And then he was going to go race. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go jog around. You meet me when you're done. But when I found out who Nick really was as a runner, I saw him differently. And when we see who Jesus really is as the Son of God, the way we think about him and the way we view him will be different. Here's the thing. My answer to this question doesn't matter. The way I answer this question doesn't matter to you. When I asked Sarah to marry me, the only answer that mattered was hers. When Jesus asked his disciples, who do you say that I am? He didn't want to know what other people said. He wanted to say, who do you say? What do you say about me? And the question that I want to challenge you guys with is when you go through Alpha this week and you kind of wrestle with this idea of who Jesus was as a historical person, what he did is, who is Jesus to you? Because the way we answer that question changes everything. One of my professors, Dr. Craig Blomberg, he's a New Testament scholar, knows the Bible backwards and forwards, has been a believer for a long time, was listening to a lecture by another theologian, by D.A. Carson. And D.A. Carson, he challenged all these professors in their faith, and he wasn't trying to convince them about what the Bible said. They all knew that. But he challenged them of what that looks like in their actual faith. And he said this. He says, if we don't consider our lives as Christians 500 billion years from now, we haven't begun to live like a Christian. Everything is consumed by this life. We live like practical atheists. What he's saying is that 500 billion years from now, none of us can imagine what that time is. But in eternity, if we think that Jesus is the Son of God, and if he really died for my sins, and if I'm going to get to spend eternity with him in heaven, what matters to Jesus 500 billion years from now needs to matter to me today. Because if it's going to be important then, it has to be important now. A lot of us live like practical atheists because we just care about the here and now. And I'm not saying we need to ignore the here and now. That's not what I'm saying. But if it's important to Jesus, is it important to us too? We have this idea that you can be a cultural Christian. Well, that doesn't really work. Because if Jesus really is the Son of God, it can't just be part of your life. It has to kind of be everything. The point is that if we answer this question that Jesus is the Son of God, it not only influences what we'll do in the future, it must influence what we do today because he died for us and he loves us. So how will you answer the question, who is Jesus? Not the hypotheticals, not what other people think, not what the research says, not even what it says in the Alpha Course, but how are you going to answer it? The Alpha Course does a great job of laying out what lots of different people say and a lot of evidence. But my challenge for you this morning is when you're going through that, if you can't make a small group this week, watch it online. Google the Alpha Course. You can find it. But what do you say, who do you say that Jesus is? You, not everybody else, but who do you say that Jesus is? Let's pray. God, I thank you so much today. Jesus, I thank you that you are here with us right now, that you love us. Jesus, I thank you that you are God, Jesus, I thank you that you're human, and God, and Jesus, I thank you that you are here today. Lord, I struggle so much with trying to see you as a human being, a dude like me who lived a long time. I struggle with that, and I just pray that you keep revealing that to me over and over again. And I pray that as we wrestle with that question of who you are, that we would take a moment to be honest with ourselves and answer that personally in our lives. In your awesome name I pray. Amen.